This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't know what to tell you. There are just days that the old noodle checks out on me. It's not intentional. I'm not going to say I'm not a gross person. I am a little bit. But if you're on the stream this morning, I sincerely apologize because as I was sitting here reading through a couple of news stories that I would like to talk about on the radio broadcast this morning, as I stood up to start the hour, apparently I just ripped a like half-drunken frat boy belch into the microphone.
So uncouth, sir.
Yeah, that's my bad. That's my bad. Like, I'm a guy who finds a well-timed burp or a well-timed fart really funny. All right? I'm 12. I don't know what you want. You hit a belch at the perfectly timed time. You lift the leg and rip one. In a dramatic moment of silence, I'm going to laugh every time. I'm a child. Judge away. It's still funny to me. But I'm not going to just like do it into a microphone that is on with the volume escalated when I know that there are, you know, 60 to 120 people with their speakers jacked up at any given time. Because somewhere, somebody sat down to start their workday, turned on the show, turned on the stream, turned up the speaker, and the first thing they heard at 7:00 on the clock was just a shredded frat boy burp into the microphone. That's my bad.
Yeah,
that's
which
on me.
Means I need to be a little more on alert for the dump button. Not that I'm not already.
I mean, you can't dump the stream. Like the folks on the stream are getting an earful of brewski no matter what.
If you let out a belch and didn't even think about the fact that you let out a belch, you may let out something else. Is what I mean.
No, I mean again.
You said the brain has left you.
You and I have been doing this show together for 4 years. You have dumped me, I believe, 3 times. 2 of them were because of the fact that I forgot to put a P on the end of a word, and it changed that word into boat. And the other time, if I recall correctly, was just because I said a word that I thought was appropriate and you didn't. And that was it. I don't think...
Well,
okay,
there's been some editing snafus on your part.
Sure, so, but I'm not going to say I've never burped into the mic, but it's usually like I stood up too fast after slamming a monster during the break, and it's like a quick, like, on the way by in the middle of a word.
It's a little secret, but it's not really a secret. You do it every day, multiple times.
No, I don't do it every day. Stop it.
And everyone hears it. You do.
Stop it.
You absolutely do.
Stop it.
If you're on the stream... confirm or deny
not
what I just
stream,
said.
Not on the stream, on the air.
No, I'm asking them to confirm what I just said.
I do not do it.
I just don't say anything to you. I mean, the monsters hit you, dude, and you'll just be talking, and a little one will slip out. It just happens.
I have made the shift over to Celsius full time. I'm a full time Celsius guy. The white monster is taking the back seat.
We've heard this before, though.
No, I know, but this time it's legit because I just found out that I can buy it in bulk cheap. So now I have I have 2 24 packs in the fridge at the crib.
Ah, so it's a money thing.
Oh, for sure.
All right.
I work in radio, buddy. Like I don't have buy crates of monster money. I don't do it every day. You know what we do every day at 7 o'clock in the morning? Your water cooler cheat sheet, the top 3 sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports with your friends, family, coworker, your dog, whoever you spend your work day with. This is what you'll be talking about.
I nailed that one. Yeah, I quit.
You had a streak of not nailing them going there.
You know, I can fix it, but you asked me not to, and it's a game. I get it. I mean, I can make it to where I would never miss again.
There's a fart sound in the water cooler cheat sheet sounder, and Lonzo doesn't like it, so he tries to cover it up with a sound bite, but sometimes he misses, and it's hilarious to me every time. Every time. Like I said, a good well-timed ripperoony is going to make me laugh every time, and that one's always well-timed. Texture said, do you not have Tums in the studio, Rob? I do. I do, as a matter of fact. Here's the thing. The requirement of a top 5 candy for me, Tums, is a nighttime thing for me. It's not really in the morning for me. Like, the Tums thing is the antacid for the heartburn that I experience as a 40-year-old man.
Look outside. What do you see?
Nothing. It's dark.
Exactly. It's still nighttime, Tech. No. I mean, it's nighttime to me is when it's dark.
No, it's morning.
It's still nighttime. It's
literally
dark.
No one is like, gosh, sure is dark out tonight. It's the morning.
Well, I would say back in the day, a bunch of people did that. You said literally no one, but you know, before there was.
Why are we doing this today? Why is everything a married fight for us today?
I don't know why you want to fight for.
I don't.
I'm just pointing out it's dark, so it's night.
It's 7 o'clock in the. Okay, guys, it's 7 o'clock at night. That's what everybody's saying right now. 7 o'clock at night. It's 7 o'clock in the morning.
There's still darkness out there. That's all I'm saying. And darkness in the studio. You continue. I don't know what's going on.
Item number one. The NFL has proposed its own rule change. We know that there are a few of them that are up for discussion at the owners' meetings down in Palm Beach later on in, actually, I think it's next week. There are some rule changes up for proposal. A ban on the tush push, the brotherly shove, is up for discussion. A rule about replay utilization is up for discussion. Now, these are team proposed rule changes. There was now an NFL proposed rule change. The rule change proposal is to move touchbacks from the 30 to the 35 yard line. Now, there is one more element of this discussion that has to be had. That discussion is the dynamic kickoff from last year, that weird kickoff that it took all of us, I don't know what, one kickoff to get used to and accept. That was only for 1 year. That was only approved for the 2024 NFL season. The NFL does have to go ahead and reapprove the dynamic kickoff becoming the regular kickoff this year. Spoiler alert, they're absolutely going to. And they're going to for one primary reason, which is the concussion rate dropped by about 10% this past season. Now, interestingly enough, there were actually the same number of concussions as the year before, the last year that the old kickoff rule was utilized, but there were more returns last year. So that means by rate of return, there were fewer concussions, even though there were the same number of concussions. There were more returns to get concussed on. The NFL is tinkering with the rule changes for kickoffs further. The proposal would consider moving the touchback from the 30-yard line out to the 35. Now, for those of you that have listened to this show for some length of time, if you will go back to the early portion of last year, the first year that we had the dynamic kickoff in NFL regular season games, I called this shot. And I called the shot because the NFL wants more kick returns. They want you to have a reason to be in front of your television after a touchdown is scored. Under the old kickoff, there really wasn't. Because, like, the overwhelming majority of them ended up in touchbacks. So, it was rare that if you got up after a tutty to go hit the bathroom, go to the fridge, grab a cold beer, maybe microwave some mozzarella sticks or something, and you came back to the TV, it was rare that you missed a kickoff return. Last year, that rate went up. The last year of the regular kickoff return, 21.8% of kickoffs were returned. Last year, 32.8%. So one out of every three kickoffs last year was returned. The NFL would like to up that number higher. Now, this is an example of a time. Somebody hand me my tinfoil cap, where I am going to call conspiracy. This is one of those times, not conspiracy. I don't want to say that. That's not quite a conspiracy. This is one of those times that I am going to assume the worst. At the end of the day, I do believe this is a condition, this is a circumstance that you can say the NFL really is about the money. Because if the desire is to limit the number of concussions and kickoff returns produce concussions at a higher rate than any other play in the NFL, it would kind of feel like the opposite would be true, right? You would want less kickoff returns. In fact,
is that still the case, though? I mean, as far as concussions go, aren't concussions down because of the new kickoff rule? And so because they don't have a running start and all that kind of stuff, so less concussions and
the numbers are that the number of concussions sustained was the same number of concussions sustained as the year before. However, there were 22% of kickoffs returned the year before, 33% of kickoffs returned the year after. So the year before, you had one out of every five kickoffs returned. This past year, you had one out of every three kickoffs returned. So you had the same number of concussions, but the number of kickoff returns skyrocketed. So you had the same number of concussions, but spread across a bunch more returns. And so logically speaking, if the NFL truly wanted to do away with concussions on kickoff returns, they would look at this and they would go, hey, the dynamic rule worked, which says that we can do more. But what the NFL is looking at doing right now is moving the touchback from the 30 to the 35. Why? Because the average kickoff return last year was 27 and a half yards. That means that if you kick the ball to the goal line, the ball came out to the 27. So in that spot, you would go, okay, kick the touchback. I will sacrifice 3 yards to make sure that they don't break one, right? Or get out well past the 30 and have great field position. By moving the touchback out to the 35, with the average return being 27 yards, now the thought is, if I kick the ball to the goal line and they take a touchback, I'm giving them 8 additional yards, almost an entire first down's worth of yardage by allowing them to take the fair catch in the end zone. So what the hope by the NFL here is that this will inspire coaches to kick into the landing zone more, to shorten up the distance between where the ball is caught by the returner and where the first line of defense is, because the closer that the ball is caught to the first line of defenders, the shorter the average return is. The average return was 27 yards, but if you caught the ball up at the 7-8 yard line, that average return was actually cut down to like 15, 16 yards. So you're still talking about getting that ball out to the 28, 29 yard line. So a little bit like around the same area. But the thought here is if the old touchback rule was at the 30, yeah, I'm going to kick it through the back of the end zone every time. But if it's the 35, I'm now giving up 8 yards instead of 3. That's almost a full first down's worth. It makes sense to kick and have them return the ball, because on average, they're going to lose 8 yards of starting field position, which could be the difference in a football game. We'll talk about this a little bit more later on in the show, but we do have two more items, so let us get to item number two. It is Major League Baseball's opening day. It is, as far as I am concerned, the best baseball day on the calendar. Why? Because the MLB's best will be on the field today, specifically on the bump. We get it started on ESPN at 3 o'clock when the Brewers and the Yankees go first pitch at 3 p.m. Freddy Peralta versus Carlos Rodon. It would have been, obviously, Gerrit Cole, but he is done for the year with Tommy John's on the horizon. Zach Eflin and Jose Barrios will go in Baltimore and Toronto. First pitch at 3:07. An hour later, Phillies at Washington at 4:05. Zach Wheeler versus Mackenzie Gore. Garrett Crochet will take the bump for the Red Sox against Nathan Eovaldi at 4:05. He's going for the Rangers. Pittsburgh sends Paul Skeens to the bump for opening day at 4:10 on the road at Miami against Sandy Alcantara. At 4:10, San Francisco has Logan Webb against Cincinnati's Hunter Green. You see Kikuchi versus Sean Burke is LA at Chicago at 4:10 in a battle of the losers. Cleveland and Kansas City at 4:10 is Tanner Bibby versus Cole Reagans. New York Mets hilariously send Clay Holmes to the bump to take on Framber Valdez of the Astros at 4:10. Also at 4:10, Chris Sale gets his first start against the San Diego Padres up against Michael King. The Bravos -130 on the money line to win their opening day contest. Minnesota's at St. Louis. That's Pablo Lopez versus Sonny Gray at 4:15. Then we got a 3-hour break before the night games. We've got a 7 o'clock showdown. Detroit at L.A., the Dodgers version. That's going to be Tarek Skubal, last year's AL Cy Young winner, versus Blake Snell, maybe this year's NL Cy Young winner. Chicago Cubs at Arizona Diamondbacks. That one first pitches at 10:10. Maybe my favorite pitching matchup that nobody else cares about. Justin Steele versus Zach Gallen. A couple of Cy Young contenders there. And the Athletics are at the Mariners at 10:10 with Severino taking on Gilbert on the bump. Seattle -175 on the money line for our nightcap. Major League Baseball's opening day. We have waited and waited and waited and waited. And finally, baseball is back, baby. Item number three. It's Thursday. It is Sweet 16 Thursday. 4 games on tap tonight. Boy, golly, gee willikers, is my bro cave going to get a bleeping workout tonight. I'm moving, this is not even a joke, I'm moving every television in the house into the Bro Cave tonight because I got baseball, and 4 Sweet 16 basketball contests tonight. We open it up at 7 or 9 when the BYU Storm and Mormon Cougars take on the Alabama Crimson Tide. Bama, a 5.5-point favorite, over-under of 175.5 in this one. Not really shocking. Bama has already covered that number once and came very close in game number 2. I do like the Tide to outlast BYU. Maryland takes on the Mighty Gators of Florida at 7:39 on TBS. Florida 6.5-point favorites and over under of 157.5. Arizona, the 4 seed, taking on number 1 seed Duke. 2 number 1 seeds in action today, Duke being the second. That one is going to go first tip at 9:39 in Newark, New Jersey. Duke 9.5-point favorites with an over under of 154.5. And then we wrap it up with it. Can we call Arkansas a Cinderella story? I heard them referred to as a Cinderella story like 3 times yesterday. They are the 10 seed. They are the lowest seed to move on. They are taking on number 3 Texas Tech. 5.5-point dogs are the Razorbacks. Over under 148.5. Can a 10 seed, but a 10 seed coming out of the greatest basketball conference in the history of the sports, be considered a Cinderella? Is John Calipari the head coach of a Cinderella story in the bracket? I don't know. They are the team least likely to be here. They are a team I'm very interested in taking a bet on tonight. Arkansas, Texas Tech at 10:09. Your other 4 Sweet 16 matchups tomorrow. Ole Miss at Michigan State at 7:09. Kentucky, Tennessee, an all-SEC matchup at 7:39. Number 5 Michigan takes on number 1 overall Auburn at 9:39. And Purdue and Houston will have the battle of the big versus the quick at 10:09 tomorrow night from Lucas Oil in Indianapolis, Indiana. There's your water cooler cheat sheet. Those are the things you'll be talking about today when we come back. Let's talk about this NFL kickoff rule and some of the other proposed NFL rule changes and how they may impact America's favorite sporting league, the National Football League. We'll do that when we come back. I am Rob Brown. He is Lonzo. We wish you a very happy baseball opening day. And we will talk some baseball, too, on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate. Within the water cooler cheat sheet, we told you about a proposed rule change that the NFL itself has put on the table. They are considering moving touchbacks from the 30 out to the 35-yard line. The thought, I don't know why whenever I call football, that's like, I think I took that from somebody, but I don't know who it was. But whenever there'd be a return or a long run, I'd be like, out to the 50, 45, finally tackled around the 32-yard line. I don't know where that comes from.
Sounds very Canadian.
I got it from Jim Henderson, who was the Saints play-by-play guy for like my entire life up until 3 or 4 years ago. He finally retired. He is an upstate New York guy who somehow ended up down in New Orleans, and he does still have a little bit of that upstate New York accent, so I wonder if maybe that's what it comes from. But yeah, whenever I call football, it's like, kicks out, and that'll bring the ball on a touchback out to the 35-yard line. Anyway, they are talking about moving the touchback out to the 35-yard line. There's a reason for that. The reason being, last year we saw a dramatic increase in the number of kickoffs that were returned. The final year of the old style of kickoff, we saw about 21% of kickoffs returned. Last year, with the dynamic kickoff in place, we saw 32%+ of kicks returned. It was one out of every five kickoffs was returned last year. It improved to one out of every three kickoffs that were returned. Why would the NFL do this? The answer is very simple. They want more kickoff returns. They want the ball in play. We have discussed in the past that if you were to put a stopwatch to an NFL football game and you were to stop that stopwatch when the ball was snapped, and you were to stop that stopwatch when a referee blew a whistle to indicate the end of a play, a football is in play, being moved by a quarterback, a running back, a wide receiver, a tight end, whatever. Out of a four-quarter game, for about 3 total minutes. There's about 3 total minutes while the game is in play. And I've been asked the question before, then why would you watch it if there's 3 minutes of action? And the answer is, because the game, to Rob Brown, the game is played outside of that. That's the execution, but the game is played outside of that. To me, I find entertainment in watching defenders scramble to get into position and watching them adjust and watching quarterbacks watch the defense and try to come up with moves. It is in seeing substitutions and tinkering with the offense and the way the offense is run, whatever. It is not just about take, snap, handball, tackle. That's the execution of the game. The art, the beauty of the game to me is in the X's and O's, in the movement, in the personnel swaps, et cetera, et cetera. But, blah, 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 blah. The NFL understands it is at its best and its most profitable, which is most important. The NFL realizes it is at its best when the ball is actually in play. And so kickoff returns are a big deal because the reality here is kickoffs back in the day when one out of every 10 of them was being returned. Kickoffs back in the day were kind of not must-see TV, right? Kickoffs back in the day, if you got up after a tutty and you made your way to the fridge and you got yourself a cold brewski and then you popped some, you know, buffalo wings into the air fryer, and then you had a, you know, you sent that text or you checked Twitter to see, or maybe you tuned over to the NFL Red Zone to see what the other scores were, you weren't really at risk of missing anything for 5-6 minutes before the ball was spotted at the 25 or then the 30 and the next offensive series started. If you didn't watch 10 kickoffs in a game, you were going to miss 1 or 2 kick returns. Last year, if you didn't watch 10 kickoffs in a game, you were going to miss 3 or 4 kick returns. It's not a huge number, but it's enough that if you're a football fan, you're like, I got to watch kickoffs now. Kickoffs are now back to being a part of the game. So the reason the NFL wants to move the ball out from the 30 to the 35 on touchbacks is very simple. The average kickoff return was 27 yards, which means if you had a kicker who could consistently drop the ball on the goal line to force a return, that ball was ordinarily, on average, going to be brought out to the 27-yard line. With the old touchback system, the ball would be spotted on the 30 if that kicker just sent it 3 yards deeper into the end zone. Which means if I am the kicking team, I have a decision to make. I can kick the ball knowing that maybe I get a stop and I push them back into their own red zone. Or maybe they pop a great return and they get it out to the 35, 36, 37-yard line. But realistically, more often than not, it's going to be spotted somewhere around the 27. Which means if I kick a touchback, I'm effectively sacrificing 3 yards to guarantee that there's not an electric play and a spark. If the ball has to come out to the 35 now with an average return of 27 yards, now I am risking 8 yards on a touchback. That is almost an entire first down's worth of yardage. 8 yards can be the difference in a field goal on that possession and not. So now the question is, do I trust my kickoff team to be able to hold their kickoff return team to an average return of 27 yards or worse? Or do I give them the ball out at the 35-yard line? Because even to get to the 35-yard line, they would have to have a kickoff return that is 8 yards longer, if I drop the ball on the goal line, 8 yards longer than the average kickoff return. They would have to be above average by 8 full yards. That's a lot of yards. So the belief here would be, if I'm a head coach, I look and say, if I drop this thing on the goal line or on the 1 yard line, the returner has to be 8 yards better than average to get to where the touchback zone is. I'm willing to risk that. I'm not willing to risk 3 yards, but I'm willing to gamble on 8 yards of difference in field position. So now I'm telling my kicker, don't boot it through the uprights. I want you to be an ace, a sniper, an assassin, and drop that thing on the goal line every time. I want that thing dropped between the one and the goal line every time. All of a sudden, there is a noted increase in the importance of a great kickoff guy, a great kicker, a kicker that I can trust to drop the ball between the goal line and the 1 yard line. Because if I'm going to not have touchbacks, I'm going to take a return every time. Because I believe that my kickoff team is good enough that I can stop their guy from just doing better than average. More often than not, I still need that ball dropped on the goal line. Because if I drop it on the 5 and it's a 27-yard return, that means the ball's going to be spotted on average at the 32-yard line. Touchback zone's at the 35. They only need to beat the average by 3 yards per return in order to get the touchback spot, which means if they beat it by 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 yards in return, they're picking up 4 or 5 yards worth of extra field positioning. I don't want to have that. So if you are the type of person that when changes come in, your immediate thought, your immediate belief is, oh, this is bad for X people who have X job, then you're happy about this. Because a kickoff sniper who can drop the ball on the 1 yard line every time is now very valuable to NFL teams. Very valuable, because I don't want to kick touchbacks anymore. I want to put the ball in play. I want to put the ball in play at the 1 yard line on a kickoff, make them return, because to get to the touchback line, they would have to go, again, 7 to 8 yards above the average kick return. The NFL believes this will increase the number of returned kickoffs, and I believe that they are correct. Just looking at it through the eyes of a nerd, which I am, because numbers matter. The only universal language is numbers, data. The numbers say, if I can drop the ball at the 1, and I just hold them to average, more often than not, they're starting 5 to 8 yards behind where they would be on a touchback. Am I giving them 8 yards of possession, 7, 8 yards of possession, to prevent a kickoff return for a touchdown when there aren't that many of those? No, probably not, right? Now, the reason this conversation is interesting to me is because over the past handful of years, the NFL has made what? Concussions a primary discussion point for them. We're doing everything we can to limit the number of concussions sustained in an NFL game. Cool. I'm good with that. I'm tired of seeing junior Seau's, right? Like, I'm good with that. But we also know that even though the number of concussions per kickoff return is down, same number of concussions, but there were, 20%, 25% more returns this year? The number, the percentage of concussions was down. The number of concussions was the same, which means that next year, if this rule goes into play, next year we will have more concussions, total, cumulative number of concussions. Even if it is less per return, we will have more concussions as a net number than we did the last year of the old school kickoff. So this is kind of one of those spots that I point and I go, it's always about the money. It's always about the money. It's never about anything but the money. The reason they're doing this is so that you and me and everybody else have to feel like we have to be dialed into every kickoff, because every kickoff could be a return. But they're going to increase the number of concussions across the league. Some people are good with that. Some aren't. I don't necessarily know how I feel about it yet, to be honest with you. All I'm saying is this is one of those times that I can point and go, I don't care how big of a fan you are, you have to acknowledge the NFL is about the money before anything else. Back after this on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. Okay. Vibes. Subscribe. Welcome back. The Rob Brown Show's on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate. Lulu Kasson of the Greenville News joining us in the next segment to talk South Carolina Gamecock women's basketball. Maybe a little baseball sprinkled in as well. We'll do our audio blitz after that. Rashad Beard of the Panther Nation podcast joins us at 8:40. Hayton S. Mario at 9 o'clock. And Fight Club at 9:20, where we'll get into all things pro wrestling, boxing, MMA, and more. But I want to get to that. Well, real quick, let me respond to a text. The Hub City Spartan Burgers text line, 844-326-3663, 844-F-A-N-F-O-N-E. That's the text number. Make a contact in your phone, because that's also the call-in number, 844-326-3663, and shoot us a text like this texter did, who said, Rob, how much money would the NFL gain with eyes on the TV with the proposed change? It may make exciting Pro Bowls. That is the reason they are doing this, in my ever so humble yet frequently correct opinion, texter. Kickoff returns are now must-see TV, right? Because we can all sit here and go, oh, I'm concerned about the concussions and all that, but like the ratings have never dropped off. So this is only going to increase. I'm not going to say ratings, because the ratings aren't going anywhere. They may tick up slightly, but like they're not going to dramatically increase or decrease. It's the NFL. It's not the ratings. It is what we in the business of radio call TSL, time spent listening. That is the number one thing, more than anything else, that we are gauged on is TSL. When you guys say, Alexa, play 97.1 The Fan Upstate, and Alexa goes, 97.1 The Fan Upstate from Odyssey, and she starts playing the show, there's a computer somewhere in the ether that presses a little button that starts timing how long you listen. And when you say, Alexa, turn off, and she clicks off, that little timer stops and it gets added into the pile of everybody else. And they say, okay, Rob and Lonzo get people listening for an average of X minutes and Y seconds. This is why I ask you all to put us on your smart speaker and then just leave the show on for all 4 hours, because it makes Lonzo and I look better than we already do. But TSL, how long are you actively playing the station or the show or whatever? The reason that matters is because Rob Brown's going to be fully transparent with you, because I'm just that kind of guy. The reason that matters is the more TSL means what? The more commercials that are playing over your speaker, the more advertisements you're listening to, the more of my live reads, the more of the commercials, the more of the whatevers that get played and put into your ear hole. And at the end of the day, that's what matters in this business. I don't think that's a shock or secret or surprise to any of you, right? That's what matters. So the reason the NFL is making this rule is not because they like really like kickoff returns, you guys. The reason they do it is because they know that after a touchdown, there is 5 to 6 minutes worth of gap before the next football play happens. Because there's a touchdown, the extra point is good. All right, let's go to commercial. We're back in Dallas, Texas after this. And then they go and they play 3 minutes of commercials, 2.5, 3 minutes of commercials. And then they come back. Tweet, kickoff, bang, touchback. And then they go what? All right, we're going to step away for just a minute for some very important words from our sponsors. We'll be back to Dallas, Texas right after this. And then you get another 2.5, 3 minutes of commercials. We're talking 5, 6, 7 minutes from the PAT to the next offensive snap. Because there's 45 seconds in between two commercial sets where they come back to watch a guy sail a ball through the end zone, to watch two kick returners watch it go over their heads, and then to go back to commercial break. So the NFL is saying, all right, how do we take advantage of that, take opportunity of that? Because that's a moment where if you got other stuff going on, what are you doing? You're getting up, you're walking to the kitchen, you're pouring yourself a cold frosty brewski, you're popping some onion rings into the air fryer, you're having that conversation with your husband, with your wife. You're maybe you got that honey-do list you didn't do on Saturday. So what are you doing? You're like, you're doing your chores in between touchdowns and next offensive plays. The NFL wants your eyeballs on that TV. Why? Because that's two commercial breaks that are widely being ignored. And they don't want you to ignore them because that is how they make all the money. This is how you get people to tune in. Because now all of a sudden, we have gone from 2 years ago, one out of every five kickoffs being returned, to last year, one out of every three kickoffs being returned. So if there's six kickoffs in a game, one at the beginning of both half, and let's say four touchdowns for the lulls, really that number's higher. Ah, screw it. Let's say there's 10 kickoffs in a game. The overcashed. You got one at the beginning of the first half, one at the beginning of the second half. Let's say you had like four touchdowns and three field goals, 10 kickoffs. Under the old kickoff, you had two kickoff returns in that game. Last year, since it's now 1-3, you had three kickoffs in the game. It's not a dramatic difference, but it's a difference. With the new touchback rule, the NFL believes at this point that they would have 60% to 70% of kickoffs returned. They believe the majority of kickoffs would be returned. So guess what? Now after a touchdown, instead of going, I got 6 or 7 minutes before the quarterback touches the ball again, now you're saying, I got 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes before a play that matters happens, because kickoff returns matter now. So now you find yourself in a position where the touchdown happens, and instead of going, all right, I'm going to go scrub the toilet bowl like my wife asked me to, you're going to go, all right, I'm going to go like grab a beer and come right back. And that's it. The NFL's got you back in front of the TV for more time. That's what this comes down to. So like I said, the reason that this feels like the NFL is saying the quiet part out loud here kind of moment is because over the past 5, 6, 7 years, players getting concussions, the cranial health of players has been expressed as like a massive priority for the NFL, which I hope that it is. I'm trying not to be jaded and cynical. I hope that they are telling the truth here. But last year, we had the return rate go from 2 out of every 10 to 3, 3.5 out of every 10. But we had the same number of concussions. The net number of concussions was the same. The concussions per kickoff return rate was down. If this new rule goes into place, there will be league-wide more concussions than there were the final year of the regular kickoff, right? More concussions, more players being concussed on returns if the rates stay the same. So what the NFL is effectively saying is, yeah, it's a big deal. Yeah, it matters. But also, we kind of need the ball in play. We're willing to have more players concussed because they're having to return kicks more often. That's it. That's the whole takeaway from me. All right, I wanted to get something else in here as we wrap up hour number two. And we are going to get a little bit more in-depth into this later on in the show. But there's a couple of clips I wanted to play as LeBron James yesterday did a one-hour interview, sit-down in studio with Pat McAfee and the gang. Zoe and I were talking about before the show this morning. I don't know about you. I mean, I do know what Zoe's going to say, but this is me setting him up to give his thought here. Zoe, I don't know about you, except for the fact that you already told me. I found this interview sincerely compelling. Like, genuinely compelling.
Not only was it compelling, it was a great interview. Looks like he had a lot of fun, but it really bothered some other people, which made it even better. When they're doing reaction shows on another, on the same network, doing reaction shows after the thing happened to try to dispute everything that was said. And just about everybody that was talked about in the video is in the reaction show.
Yep. He addressed Stephen A. Smith and their little showdown. He addressed Brian Windhorst and their relationship, I guess, or lack thereof, I don't know. He addressed something else, though, that I thought was really interesting, and I think this is something we're going to be talking about for a while. Here is a very short clip that LeBron had on the McAfee show yesterday. So LeBron insinuating there, very heavy-handedly, that the year he went into the NBA draft, insinuating, not claiming, not saying as a fact, just lightly hinting that perhaps, perchance, per maybe, the NBA may have possibly, potentially, theoretically, maybe manipulated the draft so that the Cleveland boy ended up with the Cleveland Cavaliers. But that's not it. It's not just that he said that he believes they manipulated that situation to get him into Cleveland. But he also insinuated they may have done that to get Derrick Rose to Chicago, amongst a couple of other players that ended up playing in or close to their hometown teams. This, to me, kind of feels like a huge deal. It kind of feels like a huge deal.
You know, in an interview where I was going, oh, a lot. This one was like, oh, I was not expecting that. I can't believe he just said that. And it also makes me think this is his last year for sure. Because he doesn't seem to care. And, you know, he did address a bunch of, you know, things that people say on the internet and disputed some, acknowledged others. But this thing... can he be suspended over this?
I mean, he didn't say they did anything wrong.
Because if they suspended him while the Lakers are on a run and have a shot to get a lot more eyes on TV, I think they're in a situation, and he knows they're in a situation where they probably can't do anything to him.
I don't think they can do anything to him. What I do think, okay, here's the deal. This has been an accusation about the NBA for a very long time. This has been a conversation that's been had a lot of times. There are other scenarios that have been discussed here. For instance, my team, back when the Hornets allowed the team to move and be sold, New Orleans, immediately, when they had like a 4% chance to win the lottery that year, immediately gets the number one draft pick. They went with Anthony Davis. This was immediately after their previous pick, Chris Paul, requested a trade, right? So there was a lot of controversy. Cleveland got three number one picks in the 4 years after LeBron left the Cavaliers. They got three number one picks in 4 years. In a lottery system, even if they had the best percentage odds to get the number one pick, for that to happen is just like statistically odd. A 41-41 Orlando Magic team when Shaquille O'Neal played there. A 41-41 Magic team ended up with the number one pick to pair a top player. This was early in Shaq's career. Shaq, at this point, like, it was obvious Shaq was going to be a dominant force in the NBA, and he was locked into Cleveland for, or excuse me, Orlando for like 5 years on that contract. But there was no one else there. There was no one else there. And a 500 team got the number one overall pick to bring in Shaq. That is, these are all things that have made people go, nah. Like, we can't prove it. It's conspiratorial. And as I've said many times, part of the reason that I do not get down with conspiracies, especially big time conspiracies, is because of the sheer number of people that have to keep their mouths shut about them. And if you've ever been around people, which I suspect most of us have, you know that keeping their mouths shut is not a particular strong point with Homo sapiens. We're not particularly good as a species at keeping our mouths shut. So the more people that get involved in a conspiracy, to me, the less likely it is that conspiracy is true. For them to have faked the moon landings, there have to be thousands, if not tens of thousands of people who know the truth. And you're telling me for what, 60 years now, not one person came forward with a set of notes? Not one person came forward with some backstage footage? Nothing? That's why I think that whole thing is garbage. For the NBA to pull off a conspiracy where they're able to manipulate a draft to get the team that they want, in this case Cleveland, the player that they want, in this case LeBron, the Cleveland boy, and keep him close to home where they know he's going to do the most ratings and do the most good with ticket sales and merch sales and yada, 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 there would have to be at least, let's say, what's the least amount of people that would have to be involved in that? Because the commish, and then what? Deputy commish? Whoever runs the draft, the least amount of people there would have to be is like probably 10 people involved and in pulling it off.
Whoever's running the
yeah, whoever's
ball
pulling the ball thing, out. Yeah. Whoever.
I don't know what it's called.
I mean, they're lottery balls. But like,
I mean, the machine.
Yeah, you know, it's like a.
Oh, the hopper. Okay.
That's it. Whoever organizes that, whoever it was that prepares the ping pong ball so that when the guy reaches in there and moves his hand around, you know, he can definitely know which one belongs to the cat, whatever. Like, there has to be probably, I'm going to say conservatively, like at least a dozen people have to know what's going on. And if this has been happening, dating back to Shaq's second year with the Magic, that means that there have to be at least hundreds of people in on this conspiracy, and not one of them. Tim Donaghy couldn't make it a year fixing games before somebody got him out of there.
I don't think it would have to be 100 people.
Stacked up. We're talking back to Shaq with the Magic. Like, we're talking four commissioners worth of time.
The players don't have to know that it's going to happen.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying the people who actually do the things to make this happen if the conspiracy is true. I'm talking the commissioner, the guys who prep the lottery balls, the guy who are making the picks, the deputy commissioner, the draft security. If you stack up, let's say there's just five people to pull that off. But the NBA's been doing this because he mentioned Derrick Rose to Chicago. We got the 41-41 Magic getting a number one pick to pair with Shaq.
It doesn't happen every year, though. It's only when a big time star that is projected to do really well. I don't think it happens every year. I think it only happens on certain years.
Even if that's true, there has to be a huge swath of people who know that this is happening. Not one has said anything about it. What makes this interesting is that the most well-known global athlete on planet Earth, LeBron James, went on the number one most listened to sports podcast/show in America and flat out insinuated the NBA rigs its draft. If anybody comes out now with any evidence to prove that true, it will be the worst thing that's ever happened to the NBA. We'll talk more about this later on in the show. Lulu Kesson talks Gamecocks next after Lonzo gives you this sports flash.
I completely believe LeBron on this, by the way. Clemson baseball got back in the win column on the diamond with a 9-1 win over Presbyterian last night. Chance Fitzgerald went 5 scoreless relief innings, allowing 2 hits and striking out 6 to earn the win, improving the Tigers to 24-4. Jaren Purifoy and Tristan McClatty both had 2-hit days, while Luke Gaffney recorded 4 RBIs and Cam Cannarella added 3 more. Sweet 16 fires up tonight with 1-seed Duke taking on the 4-seed Arizona. John Schreier announced yesterday that Malik Brown, who has not played since the ACC tournament with a shoulder injury, could be added to the lineup tonight. Tune in this afternoon from 3 to 7 p.m. for Wire to Wire, Cole Bryson and Diesel. Ride shotgun on your drive home and get you up to date on the latest local and national sports news. Great guests, great debate, and a whole lot of fun. And you guessed it, it's all Wire to Wire.